Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Sullivan gradually striding away. Nothing dramatic.
Hello and welcome to a special Irish Examiner New Year podcast. I'm Larry Ryan. In early March, on International Women's Day, we assembled a panel of guests in our new studio in Blackpool to discuss what needed to be done to grow engagement with and coverage of women's sport. Since then, the year panned out like nobody envisaged. So this time, our panel assembled on Zoom to chat about the progress and problems during the year gone by, the impact of the 20 by 20 campaign, and how the pandemic has affected the trajectory of planned change. We had Louise Galvin, Sevens International, as well as ladies footballer and basketball star and qualified physiotherapist. Therese O'Callaghan, Irish Examiner GA writer and multiple All-Ireland winner in Camogie. Cliona Foley, sports writer and longtime advocate for women's sport. And Owen Cormacan, Irish Examiner writer and regular reporter on ladies football and Camogie. The wide-ranging chat touched on the high-profile LGFA controversy, the potential for integrating ladies football and Camogie into the GAA, issues around sponsorship, corporate responsibility and much more, while our panel also picked the highs and lows of the year and expressed their wishes for 2021. But first I asked them if it was still appropriate that we were using phrases like women's sport at all.
Well, it's a progression that we're even asking that question, because 10 years ago, if you said that, Larry, people would be like, what do you mean? Like, it is women's sport. But I do remember once being asked, did I prefer, you know, why is it women's rugby and ladies football? And I was like, well, or do I consider myself a women's rugby player or ladies footballer? I said a rugby player and a footballer, you know, just drop the extra labels. So I think we are starting to come around to those discussions, which in itself is a bit of a progression. I'm not sure what the others think.
Yeah, I agree. I think the necessity for the tag or for siloing it at times has been created because of the inequality of coverage and things. But I think, you know, sport is sport is sport. And I think increasingly we're not going to have to do that. And one of the clever things, I was only talking about somebody recently, is I think a really clever thing is when teams create identities for themselves. You know, so it's very interesting to see, even in England with the Red Roses, you know, that was a 2016 decision to give them a name and give them a title. So you're not talking about your female team or the women's team. They have an identity that's genderless, and yet we all know who they are. So I often thought it would be really clever if, you know, we could give those sort of identities to our teams rather than having to speak about them in gender. I think it's a really clever marketing tool, and they literally came up with it in 2016, and look how it stuck.
I was just going to say, Clean, it's quite like New Zealand. Even in basketball, it's the Tall Ferns, the Tall Blacks are the men's basketball team, Black Ferns, Sevens, Silver Ferns. The New Zealand are another country that continually use that label,
and from Australia the outside as well.
In, yeah.
I often thought it'd be great competition to run, you know. And I think I'm responsible for calling the Dublin ladies women team the Jackies, but I could not be. And at the time, sometimes people would go, "Why give them a label? Or, you know, are you? Is that a sort of diminution?" And I that was where I was coming from. And I think it'd be interesting to hear Trey's and Owen as well. Like, what do you think?
I suppose somebody for me, and it's kind of topical at the moment, I look at is Rachel Blackmore, the jockey, and you know, we don't. You know, she's a very successful jockey, but you don't see headlines, you know, she's a great female jockey. She's a great jockey. And she's competing with the best of men, you know, in her sport. And I think, you know, that's what I would look at. And we see her at Leopardstown and, you know, at the moment, and what she did at Cheltenham. And, you know, if we could just get that thought process going, a person is a very good sports person. The gender shouldn't be up there in the headlines.
What do you think?
Yeah, no, just even to bring it down another avenue, to maybe go back to Larry's initial question, or when you asked the question, it's just having the conversation. Because if you're talking about highlights, you know, you're talking about lowlights, and then I suppose we get into, I suppose, the injustices that are, you know, time and again foisted upon women in sport. And if you're not having the conversation, then they don't get discussed, and maybe, you know, participants within women in sport don't have the confidence to come forward and to raise these injustices, because it's not part of the general conversation. But I suppose the more you talk about it, the more we hear, the more we learn, the more issues are raised, you know, they become, you know, they're entered into the public domain. And then that's where change occurs. So I think it's important, even, you know, if people don't like putting the label on it, you know, as women in sport, as opposed to just sport, or as trades just said, you know, a jockey as opposed to a female jockey, I just think it's so important to continue to keep having the conversation, because we'll keep unearthing things that we didn't know about and they weren't comfortable or confident talking about in years previous. Just the one example, you know, the Cork Jewel players this year, where, you know, they came out publicly and they threatened strike. You know, this has been going on for 15 years, but they had the confidence this year to do so, because I think it was just discussed more, and they felt, you know, people are more aware of this issue. People are saying to us, you know, this is not acceptable. You know, you should speak up. And they did. And we saw the corrective action taken. So I just think it's so important that we keep having this this conversation, just to bring about improvements like that.
I have an interesting, I suppose, maybe a slightly different take on the Cork Jewel player. And I don't think it's a Cork Jewel player. I think it's a women's Jewel player in Gaelic Games. I don't know, is it possible anymore? Like, they've, you know, the concept is gone in men's, because the commitment level is so high, and the schedule is so tight. Now, ideally, the two associations, that was the problem this year, get together and do not have fixture clashes. But if you have dual players, you're still going to have players who play two inter-county games possibly in 48 hours. Now, that's a decision they make. What I don't want to hear is, I don't want to hear managers complaining about that, because that's a decision they make. We overplay this a bit, I think, you know, because, like, men have done it for years. Men have done it in different sports for years. You know, basketball players have played GA, played two games one weekend. So why is this big issue? You know, Tipperary players have done it. Water players have done it. Megan Tyne does it in Meath. Players do it. We definitely shouldn't see the two organisations, women's football and the ladies, putting fixtures on the same day. But I think they're fighting now. At the level we're at, we want to see things live on television. We want to see players live on television. So if they're competing for dates, there are going to be clashes. And surely players are going to have to make choices.
I think that's a sign of the progression of women's sport as well. Absolutely. In that, I mean, I know, for an example, people would say, oh, you play multi-sport. And I like to think in 10, 15 years, there'll never be another Louise Gavin, not because I want to be unique and there's plenty like me, but because I'd like to think each individual sport has progressed so much that you can't take up rugby in your mid-20s and become a captain to national, because it has just evolved that much. And I think if ladies football and camogie are both going to continue in the vein that they are, well, maybe there is a case of, if you're going to play a game, a high intensity, high tempo game for 65 plus minutes on a Saturday, that there's 15 better players, more than likely, unless you're an absolute superstar, that can take to the field the following day. And as you say, if you're bringing in TV rights into it, that adds another whole other, I suppose, organisation that has a lot of say, because if, you know, a big thing is that getting that exposure, and that was a lot of the 2020 campaign as well. And we have to give them that space. And unfortunately, if we're only starting to get exposure, TV exposure for the earlier rounds, now in camogie and ladies football, well, we might have to take the less popular slots, because that's where you start and that's where you begin. So I'm not saying it's the end of the dual pair, but there is probably going to be more and more barriers, and in ways, legitimate barriers, such as the development and progression of the individuals playing the game, the commitment required, and probably that increased media and TV exposure as well.
Libby Coppinger did say in an interview with the Examiner there, when this was all highlighted, what, maybe a month and a half ago, that look, if it gets to the stage where the training demands in both codes are unsustainable, then I've no, this is Libby, I'm calling Libby, I've no problem. I'll pick a code. I've no issue with that. But she was saying, you know, it shouldn't the barrier that's preventing me from being a dual player shouldn't be two organizations. She feels at the moment that she can manage the training loads. She's two very cooperative managers in Paddy Murray and Aoife Fitzgerald. She's saying, you know, the barrier shouldn't be the dates. And she has no issue. And the others have said they've no issue playing a match on a Saturday and a match on a Sunday. And you make a fair point, Louise, with regard to, you know, if you've expended yourself on a Saturday, are the 15 better players on you on a Sunday in better physical condition? Whereas she's willing to put her hand up for that to play both games. And I do believe for the time being, you know, that should always be facilitated, because I don't think, you know, there are enough days in the calendar where you can play a camogie match on a Saturday and a ladies football match on a Sunday. And I just think there's better organization required between the two associations. And we also can't forget about the club players either, the dual club player, because so many of them we saw, and I'm sure we'll get to this in a while. Right. We saw what happened with Kerry in Tipperary. If the dual player becomes extinct at inter-county level, then does that conversation disappear at club level with regard to what happened? Because that needs to be highlighted. Because, you know, if that's not highlighted, then that becomes acceptable in every county in Ireland, and that's not fair on any player whatsoever. No,
and you're right on. It should at club level it should never happen. I mean, county boys. It's very interesting. Dublin Ladies Football and Dublin Camogie have a working group, and they have had a working group, I think, for the last 2 years, and they work together to make sure that there's no clash of fixtures at local club level. I think that should operate in every county. And by the way, I'm not knocking anybody who's playing dual. I just think the level of training, and as I think it's going to become actually a welfare issue down the road, because Trace, covering men's GA for years, we've seen that dual players have died out, you know?
I just feel there are so many different strands to this issue. Yeah, first of all, I feel there aren't enough days in the week to accommodate the schedules of both ladies football and camogie. It's as simple as that. Because what you have now, as against going back years ago, is you have back doors, you have group matches. If there's replays, if the weather is bad and a game has to be rescheduled. So a fixture list goes out the window when things like this happen. Now, I also think that the dual player, I've seen it this year, where dual players, we won't mention any names, but dual players missing out because of their dual involvement. Mm. Now, I also feel there's another side to this, and I feel it's very difficult on the players to make a decision, who am I going to play with? Mm. You have within a county a very strong camogie team and a very average ladies football team. Do I play with the strong team? Because, you know, I have a better chance of maybe winning an All-Ireland medal. Do I stay with the other team? Obviously, if you're a dual player, you're talented. Do I stay with them? Do I try and help them to progress? Look, here in Cork, we've had the issue, as Owen has pointed out, but the managers have worked together. What about a county where managers won't work together? I just feel that there are so many, so many different issues to be addressed here. Certainly at club level, I think it's possible, but look, I think it's looking more likely at inter-county level that it is not possible to play the two codes.
And I think Louise's point is well about that fact that the developmental level has got so much higher, and girls are going into, you know, that level of elite sport much younger. So I'm thinking of somebody like Zara Foley, for example, with Cork City, who was brilliant at loads of sports when she was younger. So Saoirse Noonan has managed it, but I think slightly the next generation down, they will have people saying to them, you know, you need to specialise because we want to get on an Irish team or a Cork team or whatever it is. So I think we are going to see less and less of it. But as you say, there's a ton of awful choices that complicate it, and also a bigger competition schedule as well. Trey's great point. It does change things, and it has changed things. The old knockout days were easier for organisations to think, but I think the live TV has also complicated things, because camogie is getting more live TV now, and that is going to change. That's making things harder, isn't it?
The whole area of the two organisations coming together, I suppose that would either solve or maybe even complicate a lot of these issues. But I don't know how long we probably need it. We need a full 2-hour Delo style podcast to get to the bottom of it. I don't know. Maybe we might as well touch briefly on it now. Do you all think like that the camogie ladies football should be under the umbrella of the GA? I mean, I'm reading in American sports and even internationally, there's a view that women should come out from under the umbrella of FIFA because get a fair deal, you know. You couldn't say that women's soccer in Ireland has necessarily thrived under the FAI either. Like, you know, so I mean, to railroad the Camogie Association and the LGFA in under the umbrella of the GA, is it fair to say that they should do it?
I just throw in a question there to add to that, which I think is probably something that's complicating all this, is where does the various identities go? I think that's a fear within ladies football and Camogie, you know, the identity. Who's going to be president of this organisation? You know, within the three organisations, a president lasts for 3 years. So how is it going to work if you merge ladies football, if you merge Camogie and you merge the GAA? I just think that's an issue because I think this has gone on about 20 years. You know, I was looking back yesterday. It's not going back, you know, recently. It's going back. The centennial Camogie was celebrated in 2004. And I can recall it actually coming up around that time. So look, you know, why are we maybe nearly 20 years later and we're still just hovering around this issue?
I think there's a terrible presumption there that going in and under one umbrella will solve everybody's problems. And I would always direct people back to just even a couple of things in recent years. Women's rugby went in under the IRFU in recent years. One of the things that happened was the IRFU hosted the World Cup. The World Cup they held in UCD, not down the road in Donnybrook, but in UCD. They could have taken it down to Donnybrook very easily, bus the players and teams up and down to Donnybrook, literally down the road, would have cost a bit more money. I felt there was a huge lack of ambition exhibited there for that World Cup, and I felt that the IRFU had a chance to take a lead on that, really, and showcase the women's rugby much better than they did. And I know Louise probably talked about this. She has experience, obviously, of working in the IRFU and in the Sevens programme. But that's one example. Even last week, the FAI, one of the great things this year, I think, has been the irony of it. No live sport, or we're not allowed to go watch live sport. So we've seen a lot more women's team sport on television. And we're talking about the women's team sport a lot here, which isn't fair to other sports, but it just seems to be where the greatest inequality is. So we've seen way more. I've loved how we've seen more streaming. I've loved how clubs and how NGBs, national government bodies, have stepped up and streamed things. And we've actually seen women in action way more. But the under 17 FAI League Cup last week, you know, there was a live streaming on. There was horrendous, you know, just disgusting sexism on the comments page. It wasn't being run by the FAI. It was obviously being run by a third party. But it was just amazing, I thought, that happened to stay there while it was live and how it wasn't caught quicker. They took it down, obviously, clearly afterwards as well. So going in under the umbrella doesn't solve everything. It takes very strong leadership. I think Vera Powell with the FAI is a great example of that. You know, got that chartered a plane. I know COVID helped, but chartered a plane for that huge Ukraine game. It needs the people who are still involved there to take real strong leadership, because there is a danger that you will come in and they'll pay lip service, but actually, will you get an equal share? And I could talk all day about allyship and about where the men should be stepping up as well. Remember in the FAI, Tommy Martin wrote a great piece for the Examiner this year. You know, for the Irish international representation, the men get $2,000 for a competitive game, $1,000 for a friendly. The women still get £250 for playing for Ireland. You know, and where's the allyship from the men there? Where are they speaking out and saying, you know, this shouldn't be happening? I just don't see that in a lot of these sports. And I always remember at that Women's World Cup, I know the tickets were so few tickets, people couldn't go to the games. I met people up there trying to get tickets because it was in UCD and there were more people wanted to go than then they had, you know, the space for, because they chose to make it smaller than it could have been.
Before Louise comes in, and she might answer this as well, it's going back to Therese's point with regard to identity and the fear over losing identity, you know, the LGFA brand and the Camogie Association, if it all becomes the one umbrella. You know, who really cares about identity? Who does that matter most to? Is it the players or is it officialdom? Because I would think, and Louise, you can answer this, you know, that players would be most concerned about something as simple as where is the match going to be on, and knowing well in advance where is the match going to be on, and knowing that that venue cannot be taken away from them. You know, Ciara Sullivan, the Cork ladies footballer, made the very pertinent point that, you know, men, you know, the Cork senior footballers can tell her 6 months in advance where their Munster semi-final is going to be played. She doesn't know until the Wednesday before Cork and Kerry where that's going to be played. And that's subject to a coin toss, as was the case this year. So something as simple as that, you would think that that would be an obvious benefit to an amalgamation. So I just don't know if players are really that bothered with the idea of identity. They just want to see, you know, very basic improvements like we know where we're playing, that can't be taken off us, and, you know, we'll no longer be treated as second-class citizens because we've as much right to pitches as the lads do. I don't know, Louise, do you feel is that something you'd pick up on, or am I way off?
Yeah, well, I mean, as a GA player, I don't think coming under the umbrella of the GA, I would feel a loss of identity, but maybe I'm not seeing the full picture that Therese was suggesting that we might feel. Look, I think it's important in all of this not to bash any of like the LGFA or the Camogie Association or any representative bodies that just represent female sport, because they're all, you know, a lot of them are volunteers at the end of the day doing their best. I think and certainly in the case of the LGFA, I mean, the growth in terms of the TV exposure and the attendances, which was going year on year in the All-Ireland final, has been huge. I think it's a case of going back again to the point of the GAA player. The sport, the tactics, the level of fitness, the level of skill that we see, certainly I'm speaking about LGFA or ladies Gaelic football, is at such a level that is it outgrowing this, an association doesn't technically have access to its own pitches. And that is nothing that the association can do about it. I definitely take Theresa's point about, okay, if we go into the GA, you know, are we just absorbed into an association and we have no actual real say, only a bit of lip service? And I think that's why we might be better off doing it now than 20 years ago when this first came about. Because nowadays, if we were just absorbed in and there was no females on a board, or, you know, how it would be set up, there'd be a lot more, I think, equality about it, or there should be. Because I don't think it's a case of, okay, you can just come in under our umbrella and you can sit there and be quiet, because I just don't think it'll be accepted in this day and age.
There'd be a demand on a government level. And to get funding, there'd be a demand that there'd be equality on a board level.
And I think another point to make, which is kind of go back to what Cliona was saying about, for example, the match fees in Irish soccer. Like women, you know, we see the WGPA and the GPA obviously joined up. And one of the things is female athletes are not trying to take money off male athletes. No. They're not saying, you get this amount off a grant and I only get this amount. We need to meet in the middle. We're just trying to either close the gap. We're trying to move up, but we're not trying to pull anyone down with it. Now, you could say the money has to come from somewhere. If you're moving up, it means we're not moving up because it's going to ye. But I think in this day and age, again, I feel like it's only male players. You're asking them to get up and to speak about it and to stand up. And it's difficult because it's only, they're so all encompassing. Like athletes, female, male, doesn't matter, are the most selfish people there are. And I say that as one, because all you are told to be ready to perform at 100%. You're not really worried about the athlete down the road who's a different gender, or the athlete in a different country, or whoever it is. Your job is to be prepared and to be able to perform to the best of your ability. It's only, I find, when male athletes either maybe start to go out with someone in a similar, you know, someone on a county team, and see that they put in close to the same, if not more, hours and actually have a lot less to show for it. Or if they have daughters and all of a sudden they're looking at, well, I want my daughter to go and play performer, if they have a daughter and a son. Like I was at an event with Peter Canavan, and he spoke about how his daughter and son were both going with Tyrone underage teams to the Centre of Excellence in Zagarvahi. The son was picked up on a bus, collected, given gear, fed, dropped back, and his daughter was a year apart, had to be dropped, had to pay to use the facilities, didn't get any gear and wasn't fed afterwards. That opened up his eyes to, hang on a second, this isn't right. They're both wanting to do the same thing. But would he be aware of that if he didn't have a son and daughter who were both interested in trying to do the same thing? And unfortunately for most inter-county players, male inter-county or male athletes, I should say, they probably don't exist, that they have some very close link where they're seeing very closely what someone's putting in and what they're not getting out of it.
Yeah, I like, one of the things I think is great is that the WGPA and GPA have gone together, because I remember being astounded a few years ago when I heard on one of these roadshows, I heard a very high profile inter-county male player saying, I never knew before that women don't get expenses. I thought, how could you not know that? How could you be playing inter-county for 15 years and not know that your female colleagues? And you're absolutely right.
Because
athletes are totally focused on themselves. But I thought it was really interesting too. See, I think all the Me Too and the Can't Be, Can't See and the 20 by 20, like this has raised awareness. That's the one great thing about all this. You're right. either they have to experience it in their own family, through their daughters or through their sisters or through their partners or whatever it is. Or I noticed Brian O'Driscoll recently, I thought at the finale, final event for 20 by 20, I thought O'Driscoll was very good and very strong. And I'd seen him tweet something and I thought, oh, that's pure lip service. You know, that looks trendy. But actually he was very strong that day and really good. And he has a daughter and he was really good on the media thing. And he was making the point that, God, women seem to have to win things before they get media coverage, whereas you can be really crap man and people write about you all the time. And I thought it was a really good point he made. So that allyship is needed. So I think often retired people who've retired from the game actually have time then to sit back and look at the equality issue. And I think that's really interesting. But there's been great leadership. And I think like somebody like Justin Rose this year, who during the lockdown, when he discovered that women's golf in Europe were losing all their tournaments, put up money, not much, but put up money and said, okay, we're going to, himself and his wife said, okay, she knew a few female golfers, we're going to set up a few tournaments for them. And I think that kind of allyship, we've seen it with Andy Murray in tennis as well. Mm. It's really, really important. As much as it is for women to speak out, I think if we want equality, and you know, the history of feminism is the same, we need men to be equally involved. And that's not putting pressure on them. I'm just saying that, you know, it really helps when they do it, particularly if they have a profile.
I think we're all a bit guilty of getting a bit of an awakening when we have daughters, a lot of us anyway, you know. We kind of see things that we didn't see before, you know. And I noticed it from when they're all collecting match attacks in school, like, just, you know, where do you get a match attacks of a woman footballer, you know? They just see all the 9-year-olds at training. You might see the boys, you know, they'd be wearing Premier League jerseys, like the girls. They don't tend to like.
But Larry, one huge bugbear of mine, I sound like a right complainer now, is that even
we're
if
here
you go
to complain.
Yeah. If you go to a sports shop, and I don't want to name specific sports shops because there's some more that, you know, one in particular has changed. They'll use male athletes, and this is worldwide, and they'll use female pop stars. And like, it just like, cop on. I'm so sick of seeing, I don't care if Rita Ora is wearing it. I'm not going to buy an Adidas kit because Rita Ora is wearing it, because, you know, she doesn't tell me that it does what I needed to do to train. But I'll see, you know, a male rugby player there advertising the kit. And again, it's not the male rugby player's fault. This is not about male bashing. It's about culture shifting.
And that's about sponsors as well. I remember seeing Rebecca Alderton. I was at a thing in England a couple of years ago, and she spoke about this exact thing. And she was saying, it's so frustrating for female athletes, elite female athletes who've won medals at the Olympics. And you come back and you don't get a contract, but some pop star gets a contract with the sports, with the leisure brand. And you're going, what the hell's going on there? Corporations have responsibility. And I think actually one of the good things through social media and everything else in recent years is that corporations are becoming much more aware of their corporate duty, and they tend to now have somebody who's in charge of equality or looking at you know, anything that they can be doing. So I think that's really interesting. And the 20 by 20 campaign had a bit of power because it had five big huge sponsors behind it. And companies now, I think, are starting to take this more seriously. And I think probably, Trez, you'd have seen that change as well since your time playing for Cork.
Yeah, and I'm kind of glad we've gone back to, I suppose, what, you know, we started out talking about was the 20 by 20. And you know, one aspect of that was the 20% increase in media coverage. But you touched on something there, Cliona, about Brian O'Driscoll. And it's something I feel it every time I'm watching women's sport. You know, you said Brian O'Driscoll mentioned that they get publicity no matter how good or bad they play. But I always feel, and I suppose, look, camogie was my sport. And particularly when I'm at All-Ireland finals, I feel a bit nervous in case it's going to be one-sided, that it's not going to be the spectacle that it should be, because I feel, okay, this is our, you know, to showcase what the sport is all about. And if we go back to I think it was termed kind of the Super Saturday, wasn't it? You mm-hmm. had the soccer final on the 12th of December, and you had the camogie final that evening. And I arrived in Croke Park, and I heard the result of the soccer. I recall, I think it was 6-0, was it? Mm. And I thought, oh God, that's not good. You know, if we have a bad camogie final, what is this going to be termed? You know, I felt under pressure that camogie needed to deliver a really good final. And you always feel under pressure watching women's game, that you have to, it has to be really good spectacle for people to talk positively about it, because otherwise there's a fear on social media, you know, that people would joke about, what's that all about? It doesn't happen in the men's game.
And that's an unfair pressure to raise on players, because the men aren't going out thinking, well, we better make sure this is a good final now. They're just thinking, I'll just go out and win. I don't care if it's a point to nil. Yep. But there absolutely is that added pressure. And I remember thinking the Dublin Galway final, ladies football final 2019, I was so disappointed. Obviously, the weather was horrendous, but it was just such a poor final. And I thought these players are so much better than that. I was disappointed because I just had this feeling of how many people are tuning in today to watch this match, and now they're turning away going, ah, tripe, you know, because it just wasn't a great game. And that is another aspect or tangent we can go on in that, in terms of that increased media exposure, it can't be just reporting on games now. It has to be that kind of level of almost interrogation of results and performances and something not being up to standard. And we should be welcoming that as female athletes, because it's a sign of progression when there is that amount of almost, this is, you know, this, the standard of the game wasn't great. Whereas I can imagine, I don't know, Owen, for example, as a male journalist, would you feel in any way under pressure to write, for example, something maybe not scathing but negative about the standard of a game if females are participating in it, because that shouldn't exist if we're really progressing?
No, I'd be blunt.
You're scathing on everyone, Owen.
Male or female.
I'd be blunt.
There's plenty of Camogie players here in Galway who'd testify to that. Like I started with the local paper here, the Connacht Tribune, and I was covering Camogie for 4 years before I joined the Examiner. And no, there'd be plenty of Camogie players and managers now who wouldn't have liked what I would have said. So, but I just think games aren't given sufficient space to be critical. Bar, I would feel, the All-Ireland finals and the All-Ireland semi-finals, because when it comes to the round-robin games, the early stages, they're given, you know, such a small piece of the paper that you don't have the space to be critical. And in a lot of cases, it's just a roundup of the games, you know, in the group stages of the Camogie Championship or and the group stages of the Ladies Football Championship, you know, what we tend to see are just wraps or very small match reports. So you can really expect nothing else but scoreboard journalism, where you give out the score, you have three or four pairs of what happened, teams and scores. It's not till we get to the semi-final stage or the final stage where you're given the half page or the full page or the double page spread that you really have the space to be critical. And I suppose that's where we need to see the incremental improvement, where greater coverage of the games at the beginning of the championship and everything isn't focused on the latter stages of the championship. But just going back to, I suppose, your point, Louise, and Trace's point with regard to the pressure on players and, you know, how the whole Camogie year is focused on the final. Looking in from the outside, I would think that's changing. Now, you might all disagree with me. The fact that we have the two semi-finals live on television, the fact we have the two quarter-finals live on television, and then this year we had the live streaming of games. So I would think that's changing. And obviously that's a positive that that's changing, that we're no longer just seeing one Camogie game a year. We're seeing a scoreline of 9-8. There's 57 frees, you know, and 56 of them warrant frees, and we're all giving out and saying, you know, this is a terrible product and a terrible advertisement for the game. So I would think that's changing. Like we saw this year, you know, with the live streaming, we saw the Galway Cork game in Pearse Stadium. We saw Becky Henley cutting over two sideline cuts. Yeah, if you didn't have the live streaming, you wouldn't see that. We wouldn't be talking about Becky. You know, we're now putting Becky on par with what Joe Canning's doing, which is fantastic and there's equality in terms of skill, and she's getting the same respect as he's getting, and rightly so. But if we didn't see Becky do that, we wouldn't be talking about it. So again, I suppose it just comes back to that fantastic slogan.
And one thing I'd say, Larry, that I've noticed in recent years as well, and I'm at this a long time, is that I have noticed that for All-Ireland finals, now it hasn't changed further down, but for All-Ireland finals now, I noticed that most of the big media organisations send their main GA correspondent.
That's true.
And that was something that didn't happen before.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a really interesting change. So that means that they are understanding that there's a quality here, that it needs proper analysis, that you give it the top job, you give it to the top person, the person who's best at covering this. And I think that's changing. The audience figures, that, you know, we need to increase, obviously, audiences regularly to make a difference with all of this. But I think culture is changing. I think BBC, it's interesting in England now, they're just talking about BBC had the Women's Super League on a red button, but they're now going to do a deal from next year on that they're going to have more live women's matches. And their magazine programme for women's attracts 500,000 on a Sunday night, or over whoever tapes it and watches it. And again, if you build the audience, people tend to make room for you. But it's this chicken and egg all the time. How do you build the audience? You know, but like Louise, you've seen it with rugby getting live, you know, Six Nations games are live. And like the reality is, I would say, okay, women's team sports are viewed through this comparative prism of men's sports. That's the problem for them. But if the quality of it rises, which we've seen particularly, I think, in Camogie in recent years and in ladies football, then people start to appreciate it. And I think we are seeing that. And I think it's, you know, women's soccer in America is a classic example of that, you know, where they get the numbers and they get the TV contracts because people have come to accept and see. And that Women's World Cup, England making the semi-finals, that changed again because they could see the women's players. That changed the culture a bit in England now. And I think before lockdown, I thought it was really interesting. I was watching, I'd watch the WSL whenever I could see it, and you could see that I could see that there were more men in the audience on the terraces, which I thought was...
Like, I mean, isn't though, I mean, standards is kind of nearly a red herring as well. It's like the easy excuse that mainly men use not to watch women's sport. They just say the standard is poor. And in a way, like, it's more, isn't it more about affinity or sort of some kind of identification with it? I mean, I'd watch the Arsenal women before I'd watch, as an Arsenal fan, I'd watch the Arsenal women before I'd watch the Burnley men, for instance. God knows I'd watch the Arsenal women before the Arsenal men at this stage because they're so bad. The men are having such a nightmare. But
Larry,
I mean,
you know, it's that who do you make the decision to go to see, or who do you make the decision to turn on? And it actually made it easier for us that we could see them on the screen this year, and we didn't have to make a decision about going out to a match. We could see them, we could double screen or triple screen, which, you know, was interesting. I think the Friday Night Lights thing, actually, I thought the women's football moving their games to Friday night, again, clever idea. Could it? I didn't hear any players complaining, but like championship games on a Friday night for women. Okay, that there's players have to make decisions there. It makes it harder then. They have to get to games and everything. But does it create a bigger audience because people on a Friday night love a Friday night game? We've seen the success of it actually with Dublin men and also with the League of Ireland. So I thought that was a really the sort of creative decision that I'm looking for women organisations support to be making, to be creative and see how can we change? How can we change?
You know, that's thinking outside the box. And Saturdays and Sundays would be the prime days for your sport, obviously. You know, they're the days that you want to play. But playing on a Friday night frees up pitches as well. Because, you know, I know a few Camogie County boards own their own pitches. But it would be far and few between. So, you know, looking for a pitch on a Saturday afternoon, and I'm sure we're going to touch on, you know, we can't but touch on the Cork Galway farce, you know, before we go, because, you know, it was so disappointing. But looking for pitches on a Saturday or a Sunday is very difficult. But pitch availability on a Friday night, it's not really a training night, is something I think certainly should be looked at. And just going back to the Camogie final, it was played on the Saturday night. Now, I did notice that night in the press box in Croke Park, the amount of media personnel that were there. I had never seen such a group of reporters, and Cliona, you were there as well. And they were their top reporters. And it was great to see it. But I'm not sure, was it because it was the first of the adult All-Irelands and they wanted to see how it was going to work? Was it because it was on a Saturday night? Or was it because of the turbulent year that we had and there was nothing else on? I can't put my finger on the reason.
Any or all three.
And I'd like to think it was the first that they all wanted to be there. And, you know, they just felt, okay, here we are. 2020, this is where we should be. And I'd hope that was the reason.
As we might just to touch overall on the 2020 campaign, like, and how effective it has been. I just throw out the numbers that they put out themselves. Over the length of the campaign, they said a 17% rise in participation, 34% in attendances, 50% more coverage, and they say 80% more aware of women's sport. You'd nearly have to give them, like, the campaign a free pass on 2020, because obviously there was no attendances at most events and it lost momentum through the year anyway. Like, how effective would you say overall the campaign was, and will it have a lasting cultural impact, I suppose?
I think it was a brilliant marketing campaign that raised awareness, and I think it has seen a slight culture shift in that there is an understanding, and like you just say the words 20 by 20 now. I mean, hardly anybody, I suppose, look, I'm in that bubble, I'm interested in this, so I, you know, I'm very aware of it. But I do think an awful lot of people identify with the 20 by 20 image. I think the can't be, can't see, which, you know, is an old feminist line. It comes from many years ago that they used it, but it And Billie Jean King used it back with the tennis players when they were fighting for their independence and setting up their own organization. I do think that that's associated, and I do think there is an awareness now that women don't get a fair shot in a lot of their team sports. I think it has raised awareness. Look, if you look at the figures, you know, still only 5% of newspaper coverage is women's sport. That it went up by 1%, 6% online. I think online, actually, some online has been brilliant, and there's a huge capacity there for online because there's no space, there's no argument over space, you know, and put the great stories, no matter what gender they are. I get very frustrated. I got really frustrated, I have to say, around June, I would say I was fairly low because I was going 20 by 20, and yet all the nostalgia pieces we saw, you know, media had nothing but nostalgia in sport to do for a whole three, four months. And I would say 90% of it, sorry, I would say 95% of it was male, all male nostalgia. But some of the reason for that was because when you go into the records, you can't find stuff about women's sport. It doesn't exist, Larry. You know, I was doing a piece about Dundalk ladies playing in the first soccer international. You know, you couldn't find stuff, and I was in the Irish newspaper archives. It's not there. And it's very interesting. I saw Clean O'Leary saying about RTE, saying that, you know, when they did that classic series during lockdown, if it wasn't for 20 by 20, they might not have gone and chased up and put out the women's games. But because they're now conscious that they have, because they're a public service broadcaster, they have upped their game, and they went and looked, and I think it was a 38% female of their classics that they put out. So look, I despair sometimes when I see the figures, but I also despair sometimes when I see the numbers. I just think it's about people understanding the difference between men and women's team sports at times, and appreciating both for what they are, and stop comparing them.
Awareness for me is the big thing. And I think we saw that figure. I think it's 84% of men are more aware. During the first lockdown, like everyone else, we were doing Zoom quizzes. We had a Zoom quiz every Thursday night. And when it came to my week to host, and it was an all male quiz. There was 5 male participants. I threw in a women in sport round. I knew it would drive the lads insane, but we knocked great crack out of it. And the scores were remarkably high. The lads really surprised themselves because they didn't think they knew these things. But like, when you asked them what the score was of Ireland, Ukraine and Tallaght Stadium, they had all watched it, because if women's sport is on television, these are sports people at the end of the day. They'll sit down and watch it. And they were asked what the score was in the Women's Hockey World Cup final, and they knew it because they'd watched it. So if these things are put in front of us, we will watch it. So the lads, you know, while, you know, they might be the greatest advocates, shall we say, maybe I'm phrasing that poorly, you know, if it's there in front of them, they will watch it, as will any sports person. So like, when we have greater awareness, we have more conversations, and we would talk about the injustices that are there, and they come to light, and corrective action is taken. So I think every conversation is positive, even if the subject matter of the conversation is of a very negative, that would be my feeling anyway.
That, I mean, just to interject us on that one, I have a niece and her husband, who's a great guy, mad Liverpool fan. Whenever anything goes into extra time and penalties now, he just says, he tweets me, he goes, McFerrin time. And I just think that's a cultural change. You know, a couple of years ago, he knew nothing about Irish women's hockey, and he certainly didn't know how brilliant the goalie was. And now penalty shootouts are McFerrin time.
Well, Therese is notoriously responsible for all games going to extra time that the examiner cover, right? Because
yes, I've had a run. Look, I'll just what I want to say about it, I do feel 2020, certainly there was more awareness of women in sport. Look, women play every sport. I mean, it's not just, you know, bits here and there. I mean, we've got to realise that and respect it. Every single sport, women play it the same as men. I just think, you know, we have to continue what we're doing. And I think obviously 2020 was a turbulent year. And I think we'll see the real progress. If it's there, we'll see it in 2021, 2022. It's got to keep building.
I think what Louise is saying is where we'll see the real progress. Louise, this is where you'll know, is to see young girls knowing who these players are and knowing that that's who they want to follow. And also seeing the Bevan Parsons and that, seeing in Irish rugby, young girls, we've now got a generation of young rugby players who are playing rugby because it's available to them, you know, because there was success at an international level. Available now in their clubs, and we're seeing, aren't you? You must be seeing this younger generation of rugby players, so they have the opportunity now as well.
Yeah, and that's a huge part of it. I mean, I know growing up, my role models were all male because that's all that was available to me. And I suppose when you're trying to dream of who you want to be, there was Sonia O'Sullivan or Michelle Smith, but I wasn't much of a swimmer or a runner. So I think it's incredible now that younger athletes, they have so much more visibility of who they can be, whether it's a Bevan Parsons or Emily Murphy Crowe, or if they're watching someone like Amy Macken. I mean, if you want to watch highlights of goals this year, like forget your Conor Callans again. I don't want to be, it's not about male bashing, but I don't think there is a male footballer with the highlight reel that Amy Macken will have this year. And just even touch on that, I mean, with the 20 by 20 campaign, again, it's a bit similar to what you said, Cliona. I feel like it was super successful because it was everywhere. But again, that's reflective of all the people I follow in my timeline and being in the bubble. The real, I suppose, barometer is if Paddy in West Mayo is aware of the 20 by 20 campaign. And to a certain extent, we might not be fully aware of that until 2021, 2022. And the momentum that has been gathered, I mean, when you look at stats, are a wonderful thing. I did a master's recently and you can make them say, you know, that the numbers are great in terms of, oh, the percentage increases. But Cliona, you bring it back to reality there when you say, well, actually, we've actually only gone to 5% of whether it be broadsheet, is it, and 6% of online media coverage. So they're still incredibly low numbers of the overall total. So there's still so much more that needs to be done. And the momentum that has been created, it needs to be harnessed and it needs to be it needs to explode even more. And that is through all the different strands that we've mentioned, such as organisational, such as bringing our male counterparts along and hoping that they'll advocate for us. It's us as players and as athletes constantly pushing our own standards and our own commitment level, because unfortunately we have to keep banging on the door to be heard, so that we can, I suppose, toe the line for the next generation, and that they necessarily won't have to do the same.
Louise, the point you made earlier about the jerseys, you know, if a 10-year-old Armagh girl sees enough of Amy Macken on television, if there's enough games put on television that she can see Amy Macken every second weekend, it won't take someone in a boardroom in a sports shop to say we need to be putting female jerseys on the rack. It will take the 10-year-old father going into the shop in Armagh and saying, have you a jersey with Macken on the back? My daughter's mad phone. And there'll be others in other sports shops, and that will tell the people that, hey, you know, we need to start putting these jerseys on the racks because there is the demand there. It won't take someone high up. It shouldn't take someone high up. It'll be coming from the bottom up, and people going into the shop. And there's a demand because these are their role models, and they have role models that they can visualize and see every weekend.
I think that's a great point, Owen. Like in a way, and it's kind of nearly a cynical point in a way, that it will be commercial pressures that will drive a lot of the improvements. I mean, I see even the Cork City jersey launch, like Saoirse Noonan was front and centre there of the Cork City jersey launch lately. And I'd say the main reason was because she was the best known of the three in the picture, you know, not to mind any kind of box ticking exercise of getting one of the women's players in there. Like, she was the most famous, well-known face in that photo shoot. Like, I see that with the Arsenal Adidas video that went viral lately. I mean, Miedemar and Steph Catley and co were in it, and they would have as big a social media following as a lot of the lesser Arsenal players as well, you know. I mean, so like, you're driving a lot of this is to drive revenues as much as anything else, and like the commercial pressures will help to sort of drive these kind of improvements, you would hope.
But there'll still be, like, when you look at what happened with the Irish women's rugby jersey this year, you know, a company who sets about. Was that a big sigh from Louise there?
That was a big sigh.
Oh my god.
That was a big sigh.
And that's my question about coming under one umbrella. It takes us back into the umbrella, because I would have thought surely they would understand that to launch the women's jersey in a different way than the men's jersey would be a no-no. And yet they did it. If you do go in under the umbrella, it really is about intelligent leadership, you know, and people understanding what's acceptable and what's not acceptable.
I don't know. I don't know what happened. I mean, I remember sending a private message to one of our media guys going, what the hell is going on? And I think it was more put back at the shirt manufacturer. But like, and even as another example, I'm a physio as well, and I was looking at a sports conference this year from an Irish association. They were putting up and advertising this big online sports conference of the elite athlete, and they put up 6 or 7 different athletes, not known, just in not that they were well-known athletes, but every single one of them was male. So I was kind of saying, so what this conference is telling me is that either every elite athlete is male, or this is only for male elite athletes. And sure enough, and sometimes I just have to bite my tongue and say, like, is this just visual to me or to other females? And after about a month, the poster was changed because it was out months in advance. Unfortunately, it doesn't stick to specific sports organizations. That's medicine, that's health. It's a whole culture shift is what people like us are all trying to gradually change and challenge mindsets.
I think social media is brilliant for that now, because people get called out. What is a challenge? I prefer to say it is. They do get called out on it, and there is reaction quicker. And corporations and businesses now are much more conscious of this, because they're not let away with it anymore, as they shouldn't be. So, you know, the same with the ladies football semi-final and the fiasco or debacle, whatever you want to call it. You know, when mistakes are made, people have to own up to them and say, yeah, we screwed up completely. That's what happened in the case of the rugby jersey as well. And I, you know, look around, and I saw Leinster, when Leinster launched their new jerseys this year, and when Munster launched their jerseys, they had male and female players there equally at the launch. And that's the way it should be.
What's good as well, Clean, is they're spreading the love, you know, they're spreading the love in terms of it's not the same. Because that used to be the thing in it, whatever sport it was, you'd have 2 or 3 players, and they mightn't even be performing the best anymore, but the 2 or 3 are known in each sport. Whereas now it's getting much more diverse, and we're going to younger players, and again, more exposure, I suppose the more TV exposure, there's a lot more than 2 or 3 players, because again, we're talking about team sports generally here a lot.
I just wanted to say on and again, you know, Louise, we're not bashing here, but it's important to highlight, you know, what happened with the Cork Galway ladies football match. But I suppose look at the positives that did come out of it. You know, if that happened 5 years ago, you know, would we have heard so much about it, and would it have been, dare I say, even more accepted? But you know, what struck me was how people came out and spoke about it everywhere, you know, which had to be a good thing. But look, that game should never even have been fixed for Limerick. To me, that's where the mistake was made first day, because there was a very strong possibility that Limerick were going to be in the All-Ireland final. So fixing the game for Limerick, just beggared belief for me that they actually took a chance and putting it there, and then looked to go to Dublin. Look, it was just one fiasco after another. But look, I mean, we spoke about it for so long. The real pity there was that day in Dublin, Cork scored 217 in a football match. And I don't think anybody mentioned it.
No.
If the two associations, if they're all under the one umbrella, would that have been a doubleheader from the get-go, and you would have avoided that problem? Am I dreaming and thinking that, or would that have been we never had an issue to begin with?
I think you wouldn't have, but you would have a dual player issue there, because they are going to have to make choices. You know, I do think, I'm sorry to come back to that one, but I do think the era of the female dual player in Gaelic games, I think, is fast disappearing, unfortunately, just because of the absolute commitment, you know, that they give to the game and the level of training they're doing. But I think you're right. And that's what, you know, that shouldn't happen. Look, they were freak circumstances, absolutely freak circumstances. But Trace is right. It should never have been fixed for Limerick. And we've never had it explained why it was fixed for Limerick. There seemed to have reasons why it couldn't go to several other venues. And some of them were stewarding. And the interesting argument being made apparently was that stewards in some of the venues would have been too busy watching the men's All-Ireland that they wouldn't have been available to steward for the women's game.
I'm probably sounding very pro amalgamation here. Like, if we were all the one association, would the GAA have told Limerick County Board, or would Limerick County Board simply have known that we couldn't prioritise a men's training over a female All-Ireland semi-final, that they would have been told, no, sorry, here now, an All-Ireland senior ladies football semi-final is higher in the ranking than a senior hurling training session, because we're all under the one umbrella. Female has every, you know, every entitlement pitch, or every much entitlement pitch as a male. So again, the game would have never been moved out of Limerick. It would have been kept for Limerick, irrespective of the involvement of the Limerick senior hurlers and their training session. You know, that could have possibly, again, that's just another, I would think, another benefit to amalgamation, to avoid all these situations and large.
I'm not sure that's fair on Limerick either, because they're preparing for their final. They have their routine. I think we would have gotten a better solution on, but I didn't like people kind of sticking the boot in Limerick, because I felt like it sounded like it should never have been set there. They said, if we're in the final, we're training that Sunday morning. And 100%, if I'm in an All-Ireland final and my team are set to train on that morning, I wouldn't be moving out for someone else necessarily if that's the way we have lined up to prepare. But if we're under the one umbrella, you'd imagine there would have been some sort of solution where times or something would have been changed, maybe the move to a Saturday or whatever it may be. But certainly there would have been, you'd imagine, a lot more collusion in solving it, rather than you can't train here and now you have to move there and find somewhere else, basically.
No, I wasn't knocking the Limerick County Board. No, what they did was perfectly right. They informed the LGFA at the outset and said, look, if our hurlers make an All-Ireland semi-final, they want to train on December 6th, they get the pitch on December 6th. They made that clear. I was just making a point that if Limerick County Board were responsible for male and female players, you know, because we were all the one organisation, would they have prioritised a men's training session ahead of a female All-Ireland ladies football semi-final?
It's about ambition, you know. Sometimes I think the players are now at a level where their ambition, you know, they don't understand why anything should be an impediment. And some of their administrators have come historically from where they've had to overcome so many impediments that asking another favour sometimes seems too much. You know, we heard how grateful they were to get into Croke Park. My question was, same thing in Limerick, could they have changed it? I don't blame Limerick County Board. It's about the ambition of the people running the sport and just where they've come from historically. Remember, as well, people don't seem to realise it, I think, as well. One of the things that an amalgamation would do is, hopefully, it would stop inter-county women's teams having to pay use, as the example you gave earlier, having to pay county centres of excellence, you know, a farcical situation, you know. And I think that that's one thing at least it would help, would be that they could use the training and share the training pitches. And they shouldn't, they're using them now, but most of them, I think, are having to pay for them.
Oh yeah, no, that cap in hand mentality needs to change. And whether or not it comes about through amalgamation or not, that cap in hand mentality needs to change, where, you know, the LGFA felt, well, not, I don't know if it was felt is the right word, where they didn't think to ask the GA, could we put the Mayo Tipperary match back 15, 20 minutes, that their initial reaction was, isn't this fantastic? We're getting into Croke Park, even if we have to go half an hour earlier. In my opinion, that mentality needs to change. How it changes is another issue, but it needs to change, because the only people who are suffering because of it are the players.
At that late stage, just to finish that, I think their backs were to the wall. You know, they were running out of time. They were running out of days. And, you know, that's just what they gave in to do that. You know, if it was different times and there was another week, we'd say, to replay it or something, or is it the Galway manager said he was sorry that he didn't walk off the field?
Yeah.
They didn't walk off the pitch.
They'd have been forced to do something about it. But look, Limerick, in my view as well, were perfectly entitled to their grounds under the present situation. But what Owen was saying, that if it was all one organisation, would it have been different?
Yeah, and I suppose it's difficult as well, because, I mean, if you're someone from the GA and you basically are faced with this dilemma of, okay, the Ladies Football Association, the Camogie Association, want to come in under umbrella, but we want to come in with solid rights. I mean, you already, before adding in a ladies football and Camogie, you already have a huge dilemma within the GAA of constantly between the club and the county. So you're now adding in more mouths to feed. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't take it on board, but, you know, they're already in a difficult position before they're trying to balance out huge fixture issues. And now you're adding in a lot more rights for ladies football and Camogie, looking for access to pitches, looking for then access to county centres of excellence, and whether it be adding in more need for umpires, referees, officials. it's not going to be as easy as coming in and clicking our fingers either. And I think that's important to take on board too. You'd hope there'd be some sort of a moral obligation of, listen, it's 2021 now. We need to have a little bit more equality. There's still going to be maybe not reluctance, but we can't all go in banging our fists on the table saying each organisation wants a third of the board. Mightn't be as easy as we'd imagine just because it's politically correct.
Well, we probably won't solve it, I suppose, today. I'm just maybe just to wrap up, we might come back to where we started in terms of if you'd all pick maybe a highlight from the year, maybe a low light, which we probably covered there a few minutes ago, and maybe a wish for 2021.
My highlight would have been actually one of the lockdown days when sport was back up and running, and I was stuck in Dublin myself and my husband. We watched, it was England France rugby, Armagh Mayo football, and then the Katie Taylor fight. All ladies sport.
That was a great day.
All brilliant. International, amateur, team sport, individual sport. And at the end of the day, he turned to me and said, "That was brilliant. That was just." And it was all on TV. We could see it. And it was just, you know, if you build it, they will come. So that was definitely one of my high points, because I went to bed going, you know, we're really getting places. And there was just such talent on display. And obviously you're going to bed, Katie Taylor winning again, national treasure, and the pride associated with that. And then I think we kind of covered the low point all right there. And then a wish is that, you know, I know one thing gladly we haven't spoken about much in this podcast is, I don't think anyone's mentioned the word COVID, which is fantastic, but unfortunately I'm going to bring it now. One issue is that, look, obviously funding for sports in general are going to be down for obvious reasons. And I hope that female sport and girls sport doesn't suffer exponentially because of that more than the male sport, or some of the promises that were in place. For example, I know in World Rugby, a huge drive has been in investing in the women's game. Obviously, for World Rugby are going to be running into trouble because of games cancelled, bums on seats not being there. And I hope that doesn't fall back necessarily on the women's game specifically, and also in all sports. So that's my wish, is that we don't see a stepwards back because of the national or the global pandemic.
My highlight was just seeing sport being played after. I think the 4 months where we had no live sport made us all realise how much part of our life it is. And for all age brackets, you know, it's particularly, I suppose, for older people. And another highlight would be the streaming of matches. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And I thought the fun at a lot of club matches when they were done locally, and by clubs involved, where you had maybe, you know, the PRO doing it with a former player and they were a point down, coming down the home street. I thought the fun and the crack and the excitement of all of that. And, you know, those videos were played over and over for weeks on end after, and it was a great laugh, great fun. So for me, all of that, and I suppose what the GAA did within their communities as well, when there was no sport, you know, how they got in and drove buses and how they went to pharmacies and collected prescriptions and brought food to people and took time out just to call to people, you know, social distance and to talk to them. Yeah, the lows. Look, we discussed the lows. I suppose, look, disappointment more than a low as well, that some of the championships weren't finished out. You know, clubs got to a stage of county finals, you know, having overcome a lot of adversities, and then just to find out the week of it that, you know, they weren't able to play them. So, look, disappointment for those players and for the clubs that didn't get to play, you know, and in other sports as well, who didn't see them out. And look, just a wish for 2021 going forward is that women's sport keeps going in the right direction, but that it keeps going on merit and that we don't constantly have to be pushing it.
In terms of a high point, yeah, look, I echo a lot of what Trey said there with regard to live streaming. You know, it was fantastic to be able to watch the Cork Senior Camogie final on live stream. I was able to watch the Galway Senior Camogie final on live stream. You know, I rang my sister that evening specifically to talk about the Galway Senior Camogie final, and I was blown. Cork, she was up here in Galway, like that just never would have happened before. So I think that's very much one of the positives to come out of COVID. I think another highlight was, you know, the Ireland-Ukraine ladies' football match. Obviously, the result was a disaster, and it effectively ended their knockout. But the day of the game, there was one of the WhatsApp groups I'm a part of. You know, there's equal representation. There's four men, there's four female. And we were WhatsApping right the way through the game. And honestly, the men were, you know, almost more interested in the game than the women. And we were commenting on everything. And I hadn't seen, you know, a female game to draw that much attention from us. You know, we were just all so excitable about it, so disappointed about it. I thought that was symbolic of, I suppose, a step forward that this game we were able to watch. Where in years previous, you know, Ireland's football qualifiers weren't on television. It was here and we were all interested because, again, it was put in front of us. So just obviously more of that. And then I suppose the low point, yeah, we've discussed all that. You know, what happened in Care, what happened with Cork, Galway, all of that. But you know, going forward, maybe it's a good thing that those things happen, because they won't happen again. That, you know, potentially a line in the sand was drawn with regard to Cork, Galway, and we will never go back. Going forward, just incremental improvement. I think I that sounds very simple, but I think that should be the goal. You know, we always look at the ladies' football final attendance, and it's jumping, you know, huge amounts every year. I'd be very much of the parish of just incremental improvement in all areas, in terms of participation, in terms of media coverage, and almost steady as she goes. Now, others mightn't like to hear that, but I think that's the best path forward.
Larry, I'll come in then. Ironically, or coincidentally, my low light nearly, I mean, apart from the cock-up over the women's football semi-final, was actually the Ukraine game. And the fact that it was Áine O'Gorman, who has been such a sterling and such a stellar footballer, and still, and come back to play international, that it was her that was partly responsible for that OG. That broke my heart. I just thought, oh my God, life is just not fair, because she's just such a wonderful person. My highlight of the year, one of the things that really kind of encouraged me this year was athletes speaking out. And that was my highlight. And I don't just mean, clearly in Ireland, like people might know, one of the great things, WNBA, women's basketball in America, professional basketball, they had a new collective bargaining agreement. It includes brilliant maternity cover, all kinds of things they weren't entitled to before. But also, they were one of the first organizations to come out on the Black Lives Matter thing, and wore Breonna Taylor's name on the back of every team jersey. It was again, because women's sport doesn't get covered that much, it didn't get much notice, far less notice. Everybody was too busy watching The Last Dance. But Naomi Osaka was another example of it. Nadia Paragina Akimosa here on the racism issue. Amy O'Connor speaking up. Ashley Maloney speaking up. Just female athletes having the confidence to speak up about issues in their sport and in society. And that really encouraged me. And the fact that they got good coverage for it and were respected for it, and only right. And I think that's brilliant. It's about, as you were saying, I think earlier somebody was saying about, you know, the more coverage you get, the more confidence, you know, confidence comes with that respect. And so that I felt was really important. And just one last thing, something that really encouraged me this year was, again, in American soccer, there's a team going to come into women's, the NWSL, probably in 2022. But this really interested me. It's about corporate and also about allyship. So at the moment, their name is Angel City. They're going to be a women's soccer team playing out of Los Angeles. Who's involved? Natalie Portman. A load of tech people and online people who've decided that women's football is worth investing in. They've also got Serena Williams. Serena Williams' daughter is also a shareholder, believe it or not, the youngest possible shareholder in a professional sporting team. So it's really interesting, this crossover, I think, between art and sport and industry and sport. And I think when you get people who, you know, genuinely love a game and see potential for a women's team and are willing to invest in it, that's what women's sport needs going forward.
That's a nice positive note to leave it on. Thanks very much, lads, and great discussion. Thanks, Trace, Cliona, Louise and Owen.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Thanks very much.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.